Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
You know, the joy of growing your own fruits, vegetables, and flowers can turn into heartache and backache. All because of weeding. There's a way to weed that's... Hank?
Yes, sir.
Come on over here a minute. You know, if you're gonna talk garden weasel, you gotta go right to the main weasel. Hank. You use one of these on your in your garden at home, don't you?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed, I do. Well,
why don't you tell us about it? Come on.
Really?
Yeah, come on.
All right, well, friends, you say you love those fresh flowers and veggies, but you're tired of the aches and the pains that come with weeding? Well, I'm here to tell you, your weeding days are over. Can I hear you say, hey now?
Hey now!
Pretty good. But can I hear you say, hey now?
Hey now!
You see, friends, I have here in my hands, well, it's a miracle of gardening engineering. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello to the garden weasel.
Hello, garden weasel.
Now, this garden weasel does the work of 10 men and a boy.
How many boys, Hank?
One small boy. Now, it digs deep down and turns them nasty weeds into valuable mulch. Your knees will thank you, your flowers will thank you, and your veggies will thank you. So, for the garden weasel, this is Farmer Kingsley. And...
Farmer Sanders.
See?
Y'all come back now, here.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a punch key's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. And true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Our business is people and their love for trees. If Mike says he's growing a pear, he's literally growing a pear. What did you think he meant? Get your minds out of the irrigation ditch. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Right.
Can I hear you say, hey now?
Hey now.
Hey now. Larry Sanders Show. Man, just the best.
Oh, yeah.
The best stuff. Just too funny. Oh, man. And the garden weasel bits are awesome.
Haven't heard much from Gary Shandling these days.
No. Wonder what Gary's up to. I think they ought to bring back...
Larry Sanders Show?
Larry Sanders, part two.
Well, they said that they actually offered Gary Shandling the NBC Conan show.
Yeah.
And he turned that down to do the Larry Sanders Show.
Yeah. I think he made the right choice.
I think so as well.
I mean, the Larry Sanders Show is just legend.
Mm-hmm.
Just great stuff. So, good morning. A cool Sunday. Wow.
Oh, lovely.
Just... amazing. However, I just, you know, I got some information from Rick DeMaio this morning While we're here, we are in Chicago, and I know there's a lot of folks listening who are not in Chicago, who might be in other places in the country. And Chicago has cooled off. We got some rain. A lot of it ended up in my basement. Yeah, that's the thing. I talked to Ron Cowgill yesterday from Mighty House on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, from 7 to 10 a.m. Saturday mornings. We're going to work on keeping the water out of my basement.
All right.
This is the second time in 2 weeks where I've had water come into the basement.
A live broadcast from Mike Novak's basement.
I think as we route my pipes, I think it'd be great. We got to do that.
Yeah.
Live broadcast.
Mighty House, special edition.
Special edition from Mike Novak's basement.
Bring the TV crew in there. Just have it a big, just crazy media storm. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, because that's where Deep Tunnel empties, and as we all know. And I don't want it to empty there anymore. I'm going to block it. And we were talking about ways that we could push the water, keep the water from going in, and Ron gave me some ideas. He said, we got this little valve we can set, and it will stop the water. Of course, it'll go in your neighbor's basements. I said, I don't care. Send it to the neighbors.
Oh, no.
That works for me. Let them put their own valves in. But as I was saying, you know, it's cool in Chicago. Beautiful weather. Last night, I was out at Angelic Organics Farm and the benefit for Angelic Organics Learning Center. Great time, great food, lots of fun. Out in Caledonia, up by the Wisconsin border. So I got home late. And that's why that accounts for that sheet you have with all the numbers on it that don't make any sense this morning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just try to interpret it the best you can, Dennis.
All right.
As we're running our commercials on the show today. Our sponsors will never know. We just mark it off any way we can. So Rick DeMaio, who's going to be on at 9:45, as he always is this morning, sends me an email. It says July 2012, and some of you have heard this already, July 2012. Hottest month on record for contiguous United States. And in parts of the country, this is still going on. It's just crazy. We have cooled off, and we're going to be spoiled by that. I've got relatives in Oklahoma City, had 113 the other day. It's just, it goes on and on and on. And Rick says, I'll tease the forecast a little bit. He doesn't see any of that hot weather coming back for at least a couple of weeks. Yeah, we'll get it in time for September, right?
Yeah,
when the school starts again. How about that? And it'll be 105. I don't know. But so he and the drought, of course, continues in many parts of the country, even though now we have had rain. Lots of it in my basement, as I mentioned. Did I mention it was in my basement?
Oh, no, not yet.
Just sort of sitting around there in the, you know how you can tell?
How's that?
When you're upstairs and you're walking around and you suddenly smell sewage.
Oh, my Lord. I've had that before.
And you think, what's that sewage smell? Now, could be the garbage I haven't taken out in the kitchen, or could be water in the basement. And that's the point where you make the trek to the basement and you close your eyes, you open the door, you open your eyes, and yep, there's water. There's water standing there. The point being, it's still hot in a lot of places, not here. And that's why I have Jennifer Brennan, the fastest talking woman in horticulture, on the phone. She's going to be with me in just a second to talk about. We got some gardening tips. So 773-763-9278. If you've got questions, because Jennifer has answers. All right. And she's got some really interesting stuff to say about the cooler weather. I'm going to ask her about what she's seeing in the lab at Chalet up in Wilmette, because she's at the microscope. People bring their stuff in bags, plastic bags, and please do that. Please seal them, because you don't want to infect everything in the garden center. But she says sometimes she comes in the morning and is at the microscope for 8 hours, just one person after another with insects and diseases and stuff they bring in. So I'm kind of interested what people are bringing in right now. She'll be with us in a sec. Second hour, Rick Hootman from the Morton Arboretum. He's the director of visitor programs. They have started to compost their food waste at the Morton. This is so cool. And it's a program that's just launched this week, I think. So, you know, paving the way and composting has got to be the wave of the future. Fully one-third of our waste stream is organic matter, whether it's food scraps or it's yard waste or some other kind of organic matter. And we can't just keep piling it into landfills. We got to figure out how to fix that. So we'll talk to Rick Hootman from the Morton Arboretum. It's possible that's not how he pronounces his name, although it's spelled that way.
Sure is spelled Hootman.
Hootman. You know, it might be Hutman or something like that. I don't know. And half the time I figure out how to pronounce these names when they get on the show. And now I'd like to introduce somebody whose name I'm going to mispronounce and hope that they don't hold it against me for the rest of the conversation.
But we'll find out at 10, right?
We'll find out at 10.
All right.
And some of the other stuff is on my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. By the way, you can always catch podcasts. Go to MikeNovak.net and click on the podcast link. You can listen to us streaming live. A lot of people are there. The Twitter folks are out in force already. I love it when I get to the station and folks are tweeting. I'm getting ready to listen to Mike now because that's my Twitter handle. You can also go to Facebook, go to the Mike Novak Show. I need a few more likes, always. You can do that on Facebook. But, you know, there I've got Sarah Batka, who's from the Master Gardeners, tweeting. She was sending a cheers to Steve. Good morning from pleasantly mild Chicago, tuning in. And she's asking, tuning in to Mike now at 9 a.m. I love it when people are like that. They get ready for the show. But this is the tweet that got me from my buddy Cope Dog. This is his tweet. I'm having a Mike Now hair day.
Uh-oh.
I know. Really? Really, Mr. Cope Dog? I kind of hurt. Kind of hurts my feelings there, you know? Mike Novak hair day.
Well, number one, who knew a dog could tie or cleave?
Yeah. Got a tweet from my friends at the Seed Keeper Company, the Seed Keeper Gals. Loved your garden weasel opening. Sorry about your basement. Yeah, I'm sorry about it, too. Got a tweet from Kokokitol, which I can never pronounce correctly. I learned how to pronounce it weeks ago, and I still can't get it right.
Make them a guest on the show, and you'll learn their name.
I think so. Who tweets, I'm not doing anything this morning, which is to say I'll be listening to Mike now via TuneIn Radio. I wonder what the TuneIn Radio is. And finally, I got a tweet from Snappy J Dog.
Another dog.
Yeah, we got all, hey, woof. Most of my listeners, you know, are canines, I believe. Some cats, too, now that I've been talking about cats.
Yeah.
And actually, so there's a new study out. There's a thing called a cat cam or kitty cam that has been. This is an interesting. I'm going to have to cover this in more detail. Remember, I did the thing of statistics on birds, and then I had somebody tweet to me recently. Who was that? Let's see if I can track that down real quick. Yeah. Carrie Dale, who says, I keep hearing back and forth you. She was tweeting to somebody called Feral Becky, who's a big cat fan and works with an organization to protect feral cats. What Carrie tweeted was, I keep hearing back and forth, you and Mike now need to have a talk, because Carrie tweeted that there's no significant data that shows that cats cause bird mortality. And yet, I got this report from the American Bird Conservancy this week about this thing they call kitty cam, and it shows that cats are out there doing it. You know, they put cams on the kitties and said they were killing not just birds, they're killing other, but they in like 17 days they averaged at least a couple of kills, and they were extrapolating and said this is millions and millions of birds. So I don't know how we may have to have a debate on this on the show.
And My Skinny Garden says it's a good radio show for cooking. Think I'm going to make a small pan of pizza sauce with my mini farm CSA share and pepper jelly. You know, we got all these folks out there. They save all their cooking for Sunday morning. The other thing I'm going to talk about later on is the tree damage continues unabated on my block.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The water department is still hacking at trees on my block. I've got more pictures. There's a new picture. You cannot believe it. This tree.
I got to look.
Go to this week's show and scroll down. That's the latest damage. They took off a huge limb and just left it there. Okay, and Kathleen went out to talk.
Oh, my.
I know. Look at that. Isn't that unbelievable?
Wow.
You folks who have got computers, take a look at that photo. And the guy tells Kathleen, oh, it was rotting anyway. No, it wasn't, you moron. That wasn't rotting. That was a healthy branch. That's a beautiful tree. That's the biggest tree on the block. And I believe it's an elm. And because I don't know if I've ever actually identified the tree. But look at that.
Yeah.
And this is so next week I'm going to have Joe McCarthy from City of Chicago Forestry Bureau. We're going to start talking about this and all the damage that gets caused by. And it's not just the water department, but it's the gas department and other things. It's like they go down the block and they dig up, and they're concerned about the pipes they're putting in, but they're not concerned about the trees. And they got backhoes, and they got trucks, and they've got tractors, and they've got whatever else out there. And they just happen to bump them, and they rip off branches and bark.
I can't believe this.
I know. I know. That's an amazing photo, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about this next week, and I'm going to contact the water department, City of Chicago, and say, hi, you guys are ripping up the trees on my block. Why are you doing that? I understand you got to put in water mains. And by the way, I asked one of the guys there, I said, my basement is got water. It wouldn't have anything to do with what you guys are doing here. And he says, well, no, we're putting in the water mains to bring the water, not take it away. So he said, what we're doing probably doesn't affect it at all. So Cowgill thinks that I got tree roots and other crud in the lines that I have to bore out. The bad news is, as Cowgill said, was that'll help you drain much faster. But when it backs up, it'll come into your basement faster, too.
Mm.
So that's an interesting challenge. All right, let's go to the phone lines and bring in the fastest talking woman in horticulture. Are you there, Jennifer?
Hey, I am. Good morning. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Got to play something for you in honor of the Olympics.
Cool.
Because I understand you took the gold in fast talking.
always.
So I'm going to play your theme. Oops. Not everybody gets a kazoo fanfare on this show.
I am honored. Thank you so much. I'm so honored. This is great. Mike, I'm so sorry about your basement. Man, I've had flooded basements, and that is just the worst thing.
Well, I know that you live in your house in Skevinston,
yeah.
as you've told me,
yeah.
Which is somewhere between Skokie and Evanston.
I'm on the low part of the floodplain and the lowest house in the neighborhood, so... I've had good luck with the village of Skokie has really helped me to resolve it, but my basement has flooded four different times in the 27 years I've lived here. So it's when you can get it fixed, it's just so nice. So I hope they get yours fixed.
By the way, I got this the tweet, Mr. Novak. It's pronounced Kokozochi, and it's Aztec for I'm having a Mike Now hair day.
And, Mike, that could be good because your hair is really nice.
Yeah, but it's...
So, you look at it positively.
It's
negative.
My hair is usually attacking my head. All right, that's my general style. And Mr. Kokozochi, if that's indeed the way you pronounce it. I'm just reading what he tweeted.
He's right, actually. I do have many, many, many bad hair days, but that's why I'm on radio and not television. Well, I am on television with you.
Television, I know. Well, we had so much fun filming our last three episodes this week, didn't we?
Yeah, we wrapped Dig In Chicago for the season. We had such a good time this week. Of course, it nearly killed me, as it always does, the three days of shooting. But we were at Jack Pizzo's Prairie. Out in DeKalb,
we got to spend the night out there and get up for dawn and film, you know, dawn on the prairie. It was just wonderful.
Awesome. Jack and Jack's Prairie is terrific. We went to the Morton Arboretum and saw the prairie there, the Schulenburg Prairie, which is celebrating its 50th anniversary.
And the Children's Museum. And, boy, you should see the children's gardens. You should see Mike in action at the Children's Gardens. You know, yeah. It's worth tuning in just to see that.
Bad hair and all. We went out to McHenry, Dennis Draher's backyard, and a bunch of his neighbors. And I want to thank Nancy Gonciorek from the Wildlife Preservation and Propagation Committee. Who introduced us to him. We shot there. We went to the Cook County Jail. Was that fun or what?
That was phenomenal. And you got to interview Tom Dart.
Sheriff Tom Dart. I'm going to have him on this show. And we're going to talk about the great program at the Cook County Jail where they teach the inmates to farm. They've expanded. Last year, they put in a greenhouse. This year, they wiped out the softball diamond and put in more fields, and they're farming like crazy.
And we got to interview some of the detainees, and they got to tell us, you know, how valuable that is for them, and how it really puts them back on a positive, you know, path. You know, and it's just the whole program has just been a good thing.
So that will wrap up that will be the final three episodes of Dig In Chicago, and they will air end of August into September. I hope people are watching it, and if you can, if you've got cable, Comcast, Channel 102, Saturday mornings, 10 a.m., if you don't, go online to mydiginchicago.com and take a look at what we're up to. Now, Jennifer.
Yes.
Cool weather.
Oh, man.
And by the way,
favorite. This is a blessing. I mean, to get these cool temperatures, the people are feeling better, but the plants. You should see the harvest in my garden, Mike, just because it got cooler. And then with that, I had 1.75 inches of rain in those 2 days where we had that wonderful rain. And it was like the cucumbers exploded with crops. I've just been harvesting cucumbers every morning, and you just can't believe how great the plants are looking. They are just rejuvenating because of this break in the weather and the rainfall.
Talk to folks, and by the way, if you've got a question about your garden, 773-763-9278, and we'll have Jennifer help you answer it. What is it about the cool weather and coming out of the hot weather that gets you excited about these vegetables getting on track again?
Well, and it's not just the vegetables. It's our woody plants. This is a lifesaver for our woody plants. And because all summer long, when the temperatures were over 85, and we didn't break the record. We had 43 days over 85, you know, in consecutively. And whenever the temperature's that high, plants don't metabolize. They just let water flow through them, and the term is transpire. And when they're not metabolizing, that means they're not making roots, they're not forming new tips, you know, and new leaves and buds, they're not forming fruit. Like the poor zucchinis, they never, you know, mine just finally started forming female flowers. And, you know, up until that, it was just a bunch of male flowers hanging around doing nothing.
Hey, don't diss the male flowers, okay?
Well, no crops.
Right.
So now that the temperature's, you know, broken, all these plants want to play catch-up. It's like, oh, my gosh, we're cool enough now, we can actually metabolize. And it's the nighttime temperatures that make the huge difference. You know, and what the plants really need is a 10 to 15 degree drop drop between daytimes and nighttime temperatures so the roots can actually do their job. So the best thing that we can do for our plants right now is give them the tools they need to build new roots, to kind of catch up for the deficit that they haven't been able to, you know, form during the heat and the drought. And they've got water now, and you can still give them fertilizer till the 15th of August. So my favorite are the, you know, the acidifying fertilizers, because our soils are so alkaline here. And so you know, in any of those great fertilizers like the Hollytone, I love Hollytone for my, you know, for the plants, and my soil is very, very alkaline.
Which is, that's an Espoma product.
Espoma product. And you can get by doing that now, but don't do it after the 15th, because if you fertilize after the 15th in into September, it's like giving children chocolate 30 minutes before bedtime. And that means that, you know, when the lights go out, the kids just stay awake giggling all night. And it's the same thing with plants. If you fertilize them too late in the summer, they continue to keep growing. They keep growing and growing and growing and putting out new plant parts on the tops of the plants. And then those green tips are very tender. They don't harden off in time for the first frost. So, you know, so if you don't fertilize before the 15th, hold off. And if you don't get a chance to, don't worry. You can catch up and fertilize in October after we start seeing fall color on, you know, on the landscape plants. And that means the plants have gotten the signal from Mother Nature, which is the cooler temperatures, the longer day or longer nights. And that means that they know to stop putting growth in the top part of the plant, and that any growth that happens goes into the roots. And our plants can form roots all the way through the fall, even in the late fall, as long as the soil temperatures are above 40. So, you know, you have to make sure, give them, you know, the tools they need, and the tools are the fertilizer. Those are the building blocks. It's not food. Those are the building blocks they need to make their plant parts. And then keep watering all the way until the ground freezes solidly in the fall, like the first or second week of December, if we don't get rainfall.
Okay, now, but I want to clarify, though, when you're talking about the fertilization up to August 15th,
right,
are you talking about trees and shrubs? Are you talking about perennials? Are you talking about vegetables?
Oh, I'm talking about the woody plants. The woody plants.
Any, okay. Okay, so you're talking roses,
woodies,
and shrubs and trees.
Woodies and perennials. So no, stop the roses, you know, after the 15th. And perennials, don't push the perennials, because it's real easy to trick them into going into active growth. And then they don't ever listen to Mother Nature. They just keep growing. And oftentimes they'll freeze to death on that first frost. So those, but you can continue fertilizing your annuals and your vegetable crops, because those, you know, you just fertilize those until they freeze to death. And because you want to give them those tools to just keep producing.
So if you've got crops going now would be a good time to do that late summer boost, to try to get a little more production, especially since the plants were sort of, you know, they were cycling in place, just as you said, just transpiring and not able to do what they wanted to do. Now would be a good time to give them that little boost.
Absolutely, especially after the rainfall. You know, the soil is nice and moist. The roots are doing they're doing the uptake that they should. And if we give them the building blocks, you know, which is the fertilizer, man, they'll put it to use. They'll do a good job with it.
That's Jennifer Brennan from Chalet up in Wilmette. You should go up sometime and say hi, visit her, harass her, ask her questions. I'll tell you what, I got to take a break here. When we come back, I got a couple of questions for you. First, I'm going to ask you, I got a tweet here. Can we talk about cover crops in raised beds? That's kind of interesting.
It's a little early for that.
But
I guess we can talk about that.
Yeah, but not now. I think the tweeter means later on. She wants to do it at the community garden this year. Has never used cover crops before. And the other thing is, I'm kind of interested in what you're seeing in the microscope.
Oh, man, Mike, it's scary. Scary. No. You know, the downy mildew on impatiens is rearing its horrible head. and it's coming on early, and it's really bad.
Wow. All right, more from Jennifer Brennan, 773-763-9278. We'll be right back. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. A study in Madison, Wisconsin, provided a great deal of information and insight on problems of deep planting. Sugar maple was commonly the replacement tree following the loss of American elm to Dutch elm disease in the 1960s and 70s. A study showed that more than two-thirds of young urban sugar maples in Madison showed decline. Some upper-level roots were found to be buried 6 to 10 inches. The appearance of the crowns declining correlated with the degree of damage produced by collar rot and basal canker, both strongly associated with deep planting. The point is, don't plant your trees too deep. Plant them a little higher is actually a little better. Really, you want to plant them at ground level where the flare comes right to the soil level. But if you make a mistake, you can always plant them up and then add a little soil. And if you want help with that task, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees for a consultation. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220 or find them on Facebook, The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Are you passionate about fitness, nutrition, personal growth, or living a sustainable lifestyle? Natural Awakenings magazine is your local guide to a healthier, greener, and more balanced life. Each monthly issue includes timely articles about nutrition, alternative and holistic medicine, fitness for your body and mind, healthy pets, recipes, an extensive events calendar, and more. Natural Awakenings is available across Chicago and in the north and northwest suburbs. Get your free copy at wellness and fitness centers, health food and grocery stores, coffee shops, libraries, and wherever free publications are found. Or visit us online at www.nachicagonorth.com. Advertisers, Natural Awakenings magazine is the perfect way to reach health-conscious and green readers looking for businesses just like yours. Call 847-858-3697 today to learn more about advertising opportunities. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
If you hadn't been by Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center recently, you'll be amazed at the changes they've made. Just a reminder that this used to be Grand Street Gardens in the heart of the city, in the Ukrainian Village neighborhood. And at Christy Weber, their yard has never looked so full and beautiful, and their new collection of cast stone fountains, urns, statues, and bird baths is the icing on the cake. In styles from whimsical to traditional, you're bound to fall in love with their beautiful new collection. I drove by the other day, and the color, by the way, they don't just have the fountains and the urns, but plants. The color was spectacular. New perennials include Denver Daisy and Little Susie Rudbeckia, Shasta Daisy, Red Riding Hood Phlox, September Charm, Anemone, Toad Plant, and more. Don't forget that they also have supplies for raising bees and chickens. And if you need a little help getting plants to your doorstep, they deliver. You should like Christy Weber Farm and Garden Center on Facebook to receive special offers and the latest news. Or go to ChristyWeber.com and click on Garden Center. Or just stop by at 2200 West Grand Avenue in the Ukrainian Village. Look for the explosion of color.
is gonna hurt someone before the night is through. Somebody's gonna come undone. There's nothing we can do.
And that applies to plants, too. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. Jennifer Brennan from Chalet and my co-host on Dig in Chicago. And, you know, after, what was it, like 4 months of taping, we still like each other. We're still friends.
Isn't it a miracle? Man, you know, and you know, we work hard. We work really hard. And it's nonstop, you know. I mean, you know, starting at dawn and not finishing until
dusk.
Day after the sun goes down.
Yeah, usually. And it's just, it for people who have illusions about being on TV, it is hard work. And for people of a certain age, all you want to do afterward is sleep for a while, a couple of days at least.
You know, that's why I posted on my Facebook page that, you know, there's nothing, you know, in life that can't be cured by a good laugh and a long sleep.
That's right. And sometimes in the middle of the afternoon, a little bit of nap. Yeah, it helps. What about that the cover crop thing?
Well, it's great because what it does is it prevents soil erosion, and then it also, you know, helps build in great organic matter in the soil. And for people that don't know what a cover crop is, you plant, and you know, you can do things like winter wheat and, you know, winter rye and even things that are in the
buckwheat.
Uh-huh, buckwheat, and then you let it grow over the winter, and then you just turn it under or rototill it under or use a garden fork and just turn it under and, you know, in at the end of winter, early spring, and then all that wonderful organic matter, you know, breaks down and adds, you know, beautiful humus, and it helps give air spaces to the soil, and then you plant your crops in the spring, and you've got this wonderful, healthy soil.
So when do you traditionally put in a cover crop? What's the time to do that?
Well, it's usually, you know, after you take your summer crops down. I usually wait until after the first hard frost, and that kills the tomatoes and things like that, and then you pull those dead plants out of the garden, and then put this, you know, you smooth everything out. I like to add, you know, a good organic matter. My favorite's the cotton burr, you know, compost, and I spread that over and work that in, and then seed with the cover crop, and it germinates and usually fills in within 10 to 14 days.
I'm looking at an EDU site, University of Maryland here. Some of the where was the list here? Oh, some of the popular cover crops are oats, winter rye, winter wheat, crimson clover, and hairy vetch.
The vetches and clovers are great because they fix nitrogen, but they can be a little riskier because they'll come back more frequently without any encouragement.
Volunteering in your garden, right?
Mm-mm, yeah, so that can get a little weedy, but it's, you know, it's a great thing because it adds nitrogen in a natural organic way to the soil.
Mm-hmm. So what do you?
It's so early to be talking about that.
I know, but you know, people like to plan ahead.
We're not even getting our crops yet. So.
No, you're right, we're still at the point where, as you said, we're still encouraging people to fertilize the crops they have now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And give them a boost because, goodness gracious, we're only the beginning of August.
Yeah, and I mean, we're just planting our fall crops right now. So, you know, I'm going to plant my second crop of beets and spinach. My 2 days off are tomorrow and Tuesday, Mike. So I'm going to get out in my garden and replant so that those seeds will germinate in 10 days. And then I'll have a fall harvest. I'm finally going to get some good beets.
Me too. I had a beet crop earlier this year. Just sad.
Yeah.
Just sad. And now I'm going to fix that, okay? I want the beets. I'm determined. I'm going to have beets, all right, this year.
And I have a beet challenge.
The beet challenge. I'll tell you what.
Off-color term for this, but I'm not going to do it on the radio, so.
All right, please don't. I'll tell you what I will do is issue. I'm going to be the garden guy who asks the question. All right. Because I've tried it and talked to people about growing beets, and I did not have success with them this year. And I've mentioned it to some people, and I'm going to tell my listeners, what's your secret? I'm going to ask them, what's your secret? How did you get a good beet crop? Let me know, and I'll pass it along because I'm frustrated.
I know the secret, but I'll let the viewers, you know,
listeners.
Your listeners, yeah.
Wait, well, no, tell me the secret.
Well, the seeds are in a, it's a cluster of seeds. You know, the one seed that you.
Oh,
plant.
you're gonna say prune. I mean, not prune. Thin.
Thin. Yeah.
No, that wasn't it. I don't think so.
Did you thin?
I did. I had individual seed. Well, okay. Long story short, I didn't do from seeds. I did from seedlings.
Okay. Oh,
I got some seedlings in the spring.
They were already thinned.
No, they had to be thinned, and I did thin them, but they just sat there all summer.
It's because it was so hot.
It might be, but I saw other people grow really wonderful beets. I didn't have any.
Because they got them in really early.
It could be.
That was it.
All right. So what are you seeing in the microscope at the...
Still lots and lots of Japanese beetle damage.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, everywhere.
Still. And so with that, you know, people need to get, you know, a grub control down on their lawns. Because with that many Japanese beetles, you know, they're laying eggs out there as well. So, get some grub control down. And then the other thing I'm seeing is, and when the nice thing about the heat and drought is I didn't see nearly as much fungus. The fungal problems. A little bit of powdery mildew, but not the usual apple scab. You know, the crab apples got rust rather than apple scab this year. There was a little bit of apple scab, but more rust because we were so warm in March and then we got so cool in April. So everything got rust. But the cool thing was when it got so hot and dry in the summer, the sporulation got stopped. So it stopped the life cycle of.
What'd you call me?
It's instead of making seeds, mm-hmm. fungus makes spores.
Yeah.
And because it was so hot and dry, the fruiting structures couldn't complete their job. So that was a benefit. But the big scary thing right now, lots of brown patch on lawns. And so right now with your lawns, you know, and with this cool temperature, the cool season grasses are just loving it and they're waking back up. Fertilize. You can fertilize. Do your Labor Day fertilizer early. Go ahead and get it down early and then wait 2 weeks and see how the lawn wakes up and looks great, and then decide whether you need to reseed if you had a lot of dead areas.
Yeah, people are going to find as we get some rain, and I do understand that there are listeners here who have not gotten the rain the way we have in the immediate Chicago area. I've gotten plenty of rain, and most of it's in my basement, as you know.
Right.
I would say. You're talking about the fertilization. Probably if you did not get that rain and you're still in the drought, you're...
Water first.
Yeah, you got to water.
Water first. With the cooler temperatures, the cool season turf grasses, they're waking up on their own, and they're loving this. They're absolutely loving this. So this is a time to, you know, fertilize it. Then if you have a lot of weeds, you can come in after you fertilize and then use the weed killers because you've revved up the metabolism of the grass and the weeds, and then those weed killers are hormones, they're plant hormones, and they'll work better to get rid of the weeds. It's all falling into place. It's really cool.
Well, but what I would say about grub control, two things also. If you're still in the drought area, you probably don't have to worry about it as much because grubs don't like dry lawns.
No.
And the other thing is I saw a thing, I think it was from the Morton Arboretum about grub control, talking about nematodes. That can control them. And the thing about using nematodes in your lawn, which is biological control, is they need moisture to, you know, because if you put nematodes in your lawn and your lawn's too dry, they're just going to die.
Mike, I saw the coolest sample yesterday. A gentleman brought in, a plug of grass because he wanted to know what was wrong with it. And it was all wet in this plastic bag. And then there was an insect. And so I didn't take it out. And it was a chinch bug. We're seeing chinch bugs, which we don't usually see those because we're not this hot. But it was a chinch bug. And I was compressing the plastic bag over the chinch bug. And in the water, a nematode swam by. we saw it in the microscope. It was the coolest thing.
Wow. How about that? Thing. Was it a beneficial nematode?
Probably, yeah.
Excellent. So that's what I would suggest in grub control. Go in that direction. Milky spore, from what I understand, is not that particularly effective in this area.
No.
I wish I could say that it was, but it ain't. And we're out of time, Jennifer.
Hey, this has been so much fun, Mike. And good luck with your basement. And and we'll be in touch. And yeah, everyone, you know, if you have questions or samples, bring them up. I'm going to say hi ho because it's off to work I go right now. So I'm heading to chalet right now.
All right. Well,
I get to do a fun thing. I'm giving a tour to the Wisconsin Hardy Plant Society. They're stopping at chalet for a tour, so they're going to arrive at 10:30, and I'm giving them the cook's tour of chalet.
And I want you to play this music.
I will. Thank you.
And there she goes. Bye bye, Jennifer.
Hi ho, hi ho. Thanks, Mike.
Yes, the fastest talking woman in horticulture and the best meteorologist in the city is next in just 30 seconds on the Mike Novak Show.
Hot, dry summers are hard on our lawns and landscapes. Use Milorganite fertilizer to help your lawn and landscape survive the stressful summer season. Hi, I'm gardening expert Melinda Myers. The organic nitrogen in Milorganite is slow release and non-burning, even during drought. The fertilizer will be in place and ready to work when better growing conditions and moisture return, so there's no need to water it in. Plus, the 4% iron promotes deep green growth. Milorganite, for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com for a garden center near you.
I love it when Lady B gets dancing in the control room. See, it's why I play this music. It's just for you. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We go to the phones, and Rick DeMaio. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Mike. Can I be your running mate?
Absolutely. I think you and I, what do you want to run for?
Well, that was the question. Yeah, we'll just we'll figure it out after we get a platform.
You know, maybe I should be your running mate. I don't know how this works. We'll flip a coin. See.
Yeah, I guess maybe that's what Romney is thinking, that Ryan will basically be the one that talks all about taxes and all that other stuff. But
you're kind of obsessed with this. See, and I look at this and I go, you know what? On this station, on Chicago's Progressive Talk, they're talking about this 24/7.
Oh, I know.
You know what I'm going to talk about? I'm going to talk about the weather, and I'm going to talk about the plants.
I was just using it as a platform that you know, you and I, the dynamic duo of weather and gardening. How about that?
And I wish more people were talking about the environment in the political sphere.
Oh, yeah. You know, the Republicans did a great job of saying no to everything that the Obama administration was trying to get done. And they successfully did that, and now we don't talk as much about, you know, alternative energy or things to actually do something to maybe alter the way the humans are, you know, maybe possibly changing the climate. Even though we think that there's still probably some things that we have to research and figure out, at least get the dialogue back to that in a progressive and forward-thinking mode. And I don't know if that's going to be part of the campaign. Most likely not. But I think if Obama wins in November, I think it'll definitely be something that we'll talk about over the next 4 years. But right now, it's probably way down on the radar.
And what's also down on the radar, it's amazing how this happens, is that, you know, we get a couple of cool days, we get some rain, and we forget that, and as you sent me this morning, July 2012 was the hottest month on record contiguous United States.
Right, yeah. And the thing about it is you know, people go, well, not 36 was just as hot. I'm like, yeah, it was just as hot, but the thing about July 2012 being the hottest month ever is the effect on the environment, the effect on farmers, the effect on people being able to keep themselves cool, meaning with air conditioning fans, meaning that your electric bill is that much higher. This type of weather pattern costs the United States so much more money when you think about what happened back in July 1936. And it would be interesting to figure out a way that you can kind of compare the numbers, kind of like how we look at, you know, Hurricane Andrew in 1992 and how much that cost. And then you then, you know, amateurize it or adjust it for, you know, inflation and other sorts of numbers for, you know, 2012. It would really be interesting if someone did a study on that. I don't think I have the time to do it, but I was driving out to Starved Rock State Park yesterday, and I took a couple of side roads, and it was interesting how in some areas of Grundy County and Will County, the corn was not more than waist high. This was some of the feed corn. The feed corn looked terrible. Some of the sweet corn looked absolutely awful. And that's still the problem. Even though we have had some decent rains here in Cook County, a lot of the farmers across the rest of the state are really hurting. And it was interesting how much our lawns have greened up around here. But still, you go about maybe 20, 30 miles west of Chicago, and things are still really in bad shape, Mike.
Yeah, and that's the thing we have to keep in mind, that the this where have we had some rain here in the area? You said just west and just south of us is the line is and so have we gotten rain pretty much north of that area?
I it's probably the best way to look at it. Generally, on a line from about O'Hare to Midway, northward, we've got about 2 to 3 inches of rain just in the last couple of weeks. But still, the northern suburbs, Lake and McHenry County, really, really struggling. Probably need at least a good 8 to 9 inches to get us back to normal. And again, the rainfall that we've gotten, it's basically made some of the drier soil a little bit more moist and able to get that, you know, that grass back to a color green. But what we really need right now, and I think we'll probably get it at least over the next 2 weeks, is several periods every other 3 days, every four days, of a good half inch to three quarters of an inch of rain. And that's what's going to begin to get some of that topsoil moist and allow whatever rain falls goes down into that 3 to 5 inch range. And case in point, when I was out at Starved Rock yesterday, I was amazed at how none of the creeks had any water in them. I mean, there was absolutely no waterfall activity. The Illinois River is down probably about a foot. Lake Michigan is down probably about a foot. And then we have this storm system go through here the other day that produced the highest waves ever in the month of August. We had 13.5-foot waves, winds of 40 miles per hour. We had lake effect rain and thunderstorms, which is incredibly odd for this time of the year. But still, that covered a very, very small area. The good news, though, is the heat, the high heat that we were experiencing for basically about 2 months, I think is pretty much over for us. I said this to you last week, that I think the chances of us seeing any days above 90 degrees over the next 3 weeks looks extremely remote. And now I'll pretty much say, outside of the 90 that we had on Tuesday around here, we got up to 94. I don't think we're going to see another 90-degree day around here for probably another 2 weeks. And we could easily end up going through the end of the month, or at least through the balance of the month of August, without any more 90s. And all this talk about breaking the all-time record of 47 days above 90 degrees, I think is in jeopardy, which is good. I don't want any more hot weather. And I think that's a pretty decent possibility that we're going to end up in somewhat of a cooler weather pattern here for the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Jennifer said we were at 43. Is that right?
No, we're at 40.
40.
At O'Hare.
Okay.
We may be at 43 at Midway. And again, the way you calculate the numbers could be different depending on which airport you're looking at. But
yeah,
still, because O'Hare is official, we're at 43. But still, by and large, when you go down to places like central Illinois, parts of Missouri, parts of Arkansas and Kansas and Oklahoma, where some of these records that have been being broken go all the way back to 1936. And I even think back a couple of days ago, I'm not using Death Valley as a barometer for how hot it gets in this country, but in the park itself, they had two consecutive days where the temperature hit 126, and they've never did that before in August. So it's kind of interesting how this heat started out in the western plains, moved to the Midwest, down in the southeast, and basically all the way across the southern areas, of, or at least central southwestern areas of the United States. In the end, pretty much every part of the United States will be affected by this heat, outside of maybe New England and parts of the Pacific Northwest. Definitely historic, without a doubt.
Is it and does that continue there, even though we're in a cooler area? What's happening with the rest of the country?
Well, that's one of the reasons why we've begun to cool down a little bit, is the heat is kind of like, if you look at it like a big blob, and where it kind of moves, depending on how close you are to that blob, will depend on whether or not you get warm weather and some of these thunderstorms that develop on that northern edge of that heat dome. This heat dome is now pushed all the way into Southern California, parts of Arizona, parts of Nevada, into the Utah, sort of New Mexico area. And because it's pushed that far west, it's allowing a little bit of energy or a little bit of jet stream flow to come in from southern Canada and move in our direction. The only question is right now is whether or not the tropics become a factor here over the next month and a half. And the Hurricane Center folks are definitely thinking that the tropics could be more active. If that's the case, which I really don't see happening yet, and I'm not an expert on tropical weather, but I can look at a pattern and determine whether or not we're going to go into somewhat of a long-term pattern in that regard. And it doesn't look like we're going to get that active. But if we do, that'll get us back into not so much heat, but definitely drier weather for September and October. What we really need to hope for is that once we do get into somewhat of a cooler weather pattern, that it's persistent enough that we can get through the wintertime, that'll help us into the next growing season. It's pretty much that's what I think a lot of farmers are worried about right now, is not so much this year, but next year's growing season.
Yeah, you got to get that moisture in the soil.
In the soil, and you got to get it down to about the 3 to 6 inch level. The topsoil moisture is not going to do us any good for those roots through the wintertime.
Yeah. While we got a couple of minutes left here, I heard a report on hurricane season, and they're upping their prediction, and I'm thinking, wow, it seems like it's been really kind of quiet. What do you see out there?
Yeah, as I just mentioned, yeah, they did upgrade us to at least 12 to 15 named storms. And, you know, you look back and you go, we're up to letter E already, which is A, B, C, D, E. That's five. But the first three actually happened way at the beginning of the season, which sometimes you get these little tropical storms that develop in the Gulf of Mexico. But your bona fide tropical storms, hurricanes that develop in that southern Atlantic regime that begins to move westward under the easterly flow really hasn't got going yet, and really we don't get into that until maybe the last couple of weeks of August, the first couple of weeks of September. But from my perspective, I still don't see that happening. As I mentioned, if it does, then that could lead us into a dry September and October.
All right, so in about 30 seconds, forecast for the week?
Yeah, forecast for today, just basically what we have out there right now, a lot of high thin clouds, high temperature about 80. If we get any rain, it won't be until tonight. And if we do get some rain tomorrow, maybe 30% coverage, about a third of an inch or less. Dry weather Tuesday and Wednesday, and then another chance of rain, Mike, during the day on Thursday.
All right. I'm happy. I like the cool weather. I don't like the water in my basement, but I like the cool weather.
It's a little bit of reprieve, and one that I think a lot of people will say thanks, especially the teachers going back to school.
Exactly. Thanks, Rick DeMaio. I need one of those cards for you. All right, Rick, you can go to DeMaioWeather.com or go to my website, MikeNovak.net, on the homepage, and we will talk to you next week.
Take care, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Hold on, Selecta.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, their business's people and their love for trees. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
I've seen a lot of pain, but I don't want to write a love song for the world. I just want to write a song about a boy and a girl. Junkies on the corner always calling my name, and the kids on the corner playing.
You know, everybody's jumping now. I just, Dennis is dancing, and Lady B. Hey, did you con? I don't know if folks were caught Mike Sanders this morning on Our Town. Lady B, were you able to con Dennis into sticking around here in the station? No? Dennis, you she needs some time, man. You know, she needs some off time. Okay, I'm just saying there, pal. I've got some tweets coming in. Good one from, I think he's right. Tree Guardian 2 tweeted, and I think he's right, that it looks like an elm, maybe a Siberian elm. I don't think it's an American elm, the one they hacked at on my block. If you go to Facebook, go to my website, rather.
And we got a picture there. I mean, it's just, it's, you got one on the homepage and got one on this week's show. I don't know if you saw the one on the homepage, Dennis, because I think Kathleen put that up this morning. It looks even worse.
Really?
From there. That's what the city water department did to this beautiful elm tree on the block. I think tree guardian's right. That's probably Siberian elm. Also, I got a tweet from Sarah, Master Gardener Organizer Sarah, who says, please tell your listeners that applications are still being accepted for the fall 2012 Master Naturalist Training. And you go to, let's see what the website, I should get the up there, web.extension.illinois.edu/cook/MN. And the Illinois Master Naturalist Program provides science-based educational opportunities that connect people with nature and help them become engaged environmental stewards. Our natural resources are under increased pressure from many sources, of course, including urbanization, invasive species, and climate change. And it's designed for any adult, 18 or over, who is committed to lifelong learning and stewardship of local resources. You need time for volunteering and ongoing training, as well as good communication skills. Yeah. Well, and that's like with the Master Gardeners. The only way you stay a Master Gardener is if you volunteer. You got to put in 40 hours each year, 10 of which needs to be education. And Sarah, I'm working on that. You know, it's this time of the year, you get to August and you go, uh-oh, how many hours have I put in this year? You start adding them up and go, okay, I better get my hours in. Sarah, you and I ought to talk about this. The other thing I want to talk about, well, have we got our
got him.
Oh,
got him.
Let's just do that, and I'll get back to some of these other things. I want you to, by the way, go back to the homepage at MikeNovak.net. I got some cool stuff, got photos of Jennifer and me at Green and McLean, our community garden.
Yeah, I saw the scarecrow. I'm going to talk with you about that later.
That's, you know where that is? That's at, yeah, the Cook County Jail. There's okay. A picture of me and the scarecrow, and I don't know which is scarier. I think I'm terrified.
Well, you are having a Mike Novak hair day there.
That is definitely a Mike Novak hair day photo. I am, we may take that one down. I like the other photo from last night up at Angelic Organics Farm. And I got to meet Farmer John, was the subject of a movie that won a lot of awards, The Real Dirt on Farmer John, and I'm going to take a look at that. He took me around in his truck, which was cool, and he showed me the farm. But at any rate, back at the homepage, MikeNovak.net, we got pictures of Jennifer talking to a couple of the inmates there. That was Dusty and Michael. And then we got me next to the scarecrow. And if you can tell which is which, I'll give you a prize.
Yeah. Well, the scarecrow, not so much a Mike Novak hair day.
No, scarecrow, not so much hair.
Not so much hair.
Yeah. And then another photo of, as I said, the tree. They got whacked by the water crew. You know, I hope some of the people in the water department are listening to me. I invite you to write me at mike@mikenovak.net.
It's one thing if the guy's like, writing his girlfriend's name on the tree or something. But, I mean, look at this.
I know. That's just embarrassing. And then to have the guy say, it was rotted anyway. Are you freaking kidding me? Go back into your truck, okay? Go have a cup of coffee and come back when you got something interesting to say. Yikes. Okay. Let us go to the phones and bring in Rick Hootman. Is that how you pronounce your last name, Rick?
It is, Mike. It's Hootman.
Hootman? Good. Because Dennis is all pumped because I got it right, which I don't do often. Rick is the director of visitor programs
at the Morton Arboretum, and welcome. Thank you for being on the program. And I got all excited when several weeks ago I was talking to Todd Jacobson at the Arboretum, and we were lining up some shots for Dig in Chicago. We went out there and shot the Children's Garden, as Jennifer mentioned earlier in the program, and we shot the Schulenburg Prairie. But, you know, Todd mentioned to me, he said, yeah, we're doing this food composting thing. I said, what? Wait, tell me more about that, because I'm very interested in this thing, because we're going to find out that we need to start paying attention to the organic matter we throw away,
right,
that we just cavalierly dump into landfills.
Right.
Like I said earlier, fully one-third of our waste is organic material. So you guys decided to address that. How did this come about?
Well, it's something we've looked at for a few years, and it's just come about because we just feel like it's a good thing to do. And like you said, with the landfill issue, it's not just a matter of, well, it's a matter of the waste going to, or so much waste going to the landfill when it comes to food, but also landfill space itself is decreasing. I think in DuPage County there's like 14% space remaining or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we just feel on, you know, on both those areas, it's a way to improve what we do. It's a way to save landfill space, improve the environment.
And what kind of items? I know you wrote to me and you gave me a list. You said you can compost virtually all food items. And does that, it means meat and bones and bakery items, tea bags, paper napkins, all of that, right?
Right, correct. And I think it depends on the facility, and the facility we're using, which is operated by Waste Management, they can take all that. We also have compostable cups that we use in the restaurant, and we can put those in there too. So it's a good system. It's really very thorough in what they're able to take, so that helps out quite a bit.
I got to tell you, I was impressed last week when I was there, and we were shooting the Children's Garden, and we went into the cafeteria there to get something to drink, get some water, and you sell water in glass bottles. That was, I was really impressed by that. Now, I imagine there's some difficulty with that because somebody drops one, now you're cleaning up glass.
Right.
But on the other hand, you're keeping plastic out of the landfills. That's a pretty bold step. I don't know anybody else who's doing that right now. It's certainly not an organization as large as the Morton Arboretum.
Yeah, we started that actually 2 years ago. We eliminated as much plastic as we could. It's hard to eliminate everything.
But you know, and I've been there in 2 years. Obviously, I hadn't bought water in two right. years there because I hadn't known that. I didn't notice before. But I love those bottles because the great thing about a glass bottle is you can reuse it.
Right.
Without any fear that you're going to have leaching from polymers. I had a woman on the show, Beth Terry, a couple of weeks ago, who wrote a book on becoming plastic free in her life. It's really, and in the 2 weeks since, all I've become aware of is how much plastic is in my life.
Right. There's quite a bit out there. And again, it's a step in the right direction. Like I said, there's still more we can do with that, but we felt like this was, the plastic bottles was something that was certainly feasible for us. And we just brought in the glass bottles this year with the water. We're sort of just looking at it and see how it works, because like you say, there is an issue if the bottle is dropped and it breaks. But we do have some other things in glass bottles too, and we always have. But again, we want to look at that, and we also just want to reduce that waste stream. So even glass itself, you know, some people would consider that to be obviously part of the waste stream that, you know, we need to reconsider. So we're just looking at all these alternatives to see what we can do better. With the water we installed, when we eliminated the water bottles, we installed water bottle fillers, so people with reusable water bottles could use that in our restaurant or out by our drinking fountain in the visitor center. So that's that's helped, ease some of the issue of people not being able to purchase a water bottle.
And that's a really good point. That was the other thing. The camera crew sitting there, Jennifer and I were sitting there outside the restrooms. There were fountains there. And our camera guy looks up and he says, hey, you can refill your water bottle here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's the other thing that Beth Terry in this book said, that a lot of people are going in that direction, which is water stations.
Right.
So, because a lot of people want to bring their own bottle, whether it's a steel container or some other kind of container, and instead of buying a bottle of plastic water, or a plastic bottle that contains water, they have this, and they can refill it, and it just makes so much more sense, and I can't believe more people don't do this.
But I think more and more people are doing it, and so that's a good thing. But, you know, we're a creature of habit, and that's the way we've been doing things for so many years. So we continue to do that. And so it's just a matter of trying to wean us off of that plastic fetish that we have and look at other alternatives.
Well, there's going to be an educational component to this. There always is in a situation like this, Rick. Rick Hootman, Director of Visitor Programs, Morton Arboretum. And I note that you create about 16 to 18 tons of food waste per year.
Right.
That's a lot.
It is, and it adds up. You look at, I think it's 90 to 100 pounds a day on average, you know, through the course of the year. But then you just start adding those numbers up, and 90 to 100 pounds is pretty big in itself, but over time it's a huge amount. And so that's good, like I said, for the landfill space and for the environment in general.
Now, there are a couple of ways you can do it. Education is always key. Letting people know that these things are recyclable and they need to participate. But the other way to do it in a situation like yours, and forgive me for saying it, is to make the system idiot-proof.
Mm-hmm.
So that no matter what they do, they're participating in the recycling program. How have you set this up?
With the composting?
Yeah, with the composting. So that, because do people have to make choices about where they throw it? Because that is where you get the bottleneck,
right,
so to speak. Because people are confused. They don't know what bin to throw it in. I'll tell you, still, after all these years, folks have no idea which cups are recyclable, which bottles are recyclable, where should they throw their bread, where should they throw their meats. Yeah, as you said, you're trying to get all of these composted. What do your visitors have to do to participate?
Right. Well, we have actually in our food service, we have a restaurant and a cafe. Most of the volume comes through the restaurant, which serves lunch from 11 to 2 each day. And in that scenario, people will pick up their food in the servery, go out to the dining room, have their meal, and then they bring their tray with their plates and silverware and food leftovers over to the dishwasher area. The dishwasher area where in the dishwasher area we take the leftovers and we put them into the compost bin. So our visitors in the restaurant don't have to do a thing, really. It's up to us to sort in the back when that material comes through. To our cafe, it's a little more challenging. We don't necessarily have a system in place yet for that. Like I said, it's not quite the volume as what it is in the restaurant. But as you indicated earlier, it's tricky because people don't necessarily pay attention to where they're tossing their items. And so we can't, when it comes to the food composting, we can't be mixing anything in with it. And so how we can set up some kind of system, you know, when the restaurant itself, when the conveyor belt itself isn't available, we still need to talk through that a little bit. But most of what we produce here goes through the conveyor belt to the dishwasher. And then with our catering, of course, that's fully controlled by us too. Any catering food waste that we have goes into these bins also. So that's all internal. So we manage to control quite a bit of the food waste ourselves, but we do need to think of ways to try and manage these other areas that are a little bit more complicated.
And that's the point. I mean, you talked about the cafeteria. Great, you guys. That's where you've made it idiot proof. Mm-hmm. Where you have them just put it on the tray. We'll take care of it. We'll direct it where it needs to go. The cafeteria a little trickier, but we're going to have a learning curve, and we got to get it right. And I love the fact that you are part of that learning process, and that other institutions can probably learn from you down the road.
Well, that's what we're hoping. We're taking the first step in this whole process, and that others will learn from us. And you know, there are a few places in DuPage County doing the composting, but very few. And so we're hoping to be sort of the vanguard in that, and others will sort of take the ball and run with it too.
And to be sure, I want to clarify that you don't compost on site.
Correct.
You give it to waste management.
Right.
And they take it. And part of the way you were able to make this happen is because you're on the route that Jewel Food Stores use.
Correct. We there aren't any compost facilities in DuPage County, so so it has to go out of the county. And the operation that Waste Management has is in Romeoville. And just in late July, Jewel Food Stores has started this compost program with all their food waste. And like you said, we're on the route between a couple stores. So we're able to latch onto that route, and the cost is just much more affordable for us. If we were just sort of out here on our own doing this, well, we couldn't afford it. It just budgetarily, it just wasn't going to work. So finally, we've gotten to this point where we're able to latch onto this route and make it work. And so again, it's kind of a vicious circle here. I think there are probably other programs, other places that want to do this. But it is very cost prohibitive with the hauling costs for doing it. And so as more of us do the food composting and can do it, then others, it will be cheaper for others to get onto it too.
Yeah, I say let's get everybody on board and start doing this. And this is all, part of this is stemmed from the passage of SB 99 in 2010, which was designed to make composting in the state of Illinois more affordable and easier. I don't know if we're at that point yet. You know, that's the thing. A couple of years down the road, you still don't see a lot of composting. And cities like this, well, the city of Chicago needs to figure out how to do that as well. And institutions like yours and all kinds of different entities need to figure out how to compost. And unfortunately, it's to a great extent, it's not on a lot of people's radar. Which is why I'm so pleased that you've done this. I got a phone call here, Rick. Again, Rick Hootman, who's the director of visitor programs for the Morton Arboretum. Let us go to line one and talk to Dan. Dan, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Yeah, hi. I'm just wondering if you know any good places to find glass bottles. Going to container stores and looking for a half-gallon bottle with that's made of glass in grocery stores is kind of hard to find. Do you have any suggestions?
Whoa.
I don't.
I don't either. I mean, what kind of bottles are you looking for? Half-gallon bottles, Dan?
Half-gallon size, you know, for water. I got mm-hmm. all this nice filtered water, and then the only thing I've got to put it in is a polymer plastic, which is pretty depressing.
Well, again, as I said, a lot of the containers are the steel containers. And what we do in my house is we have in the past, and I can't even remember how long ago it was, bought some glass. I think we bought tea, you know, some of those tea products in glass jars and the occasional juice jar. Now, they're not that size you're looking for. These are like 12 ounces, you know, but we refill those all the time.
All right, that's a start.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things we try to do is use the glass containers. I'll tell you what, I'd be really interested if anybody else has got information on where to get glass containers. Send me a tweet, send me something on Facebook, or call 773-763-9278. That's a great question, Dan.
Good, yeah.
Maybe we can get somebody to weigh in on that.
Okay, maybe if they come in during the week, I could post it on your site.
Oh, absolutely. If I get that information, do you want me to post it on Facebook?
Preferably your site.
The website?
Yeah.
Okay. Definitely.
Yeah,
I'll give that a shot, and I hope we get some people to do that.
Great. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Bye-bye.
One thing that comes to mind is when you asked the question, I was thinking of those half-gallon or gallon-sized milk containers, the glass milk containers that you might get delivered to your house. I suppose you could reuse one of those.
Yeah, you could. They're kind of bulky. And I know that a lot of I shouldn't say a lot. I know that some milk companies still reuse them. I mean, that's one of the ways you can go back to the future,
right?
And have your milk delivered in those containers or reuse those containers. They still sell milk in glass containers. Mm-hmm. I know it's just that we have gotten to the point. And I keep going back to that book, Plastic Free, which I think everybody should buy. I'm not making anything off of it, but Beth Terry wrote an amazing book. And when you read the chronicles of her life and how she's tried to get plastics out of her life, you realize it's ubiquitous. There's not much you can do. There are things you can do, but you're surrounded by it. That's
right.
The point. We're all surrounded by it. So my kudos to you for attempting to get rid of some of the plastic at the Morton Arboretum. I imagine that that is also, in your case, a way to keep plastics out of your landscapes, too.
Correct. Yeah. Even here, although our visitors really do a good job of managing any trash that they have, we still find the plastic bottles and other things like that on the grounds. But you see it everywhere. So anywhere where we can eliminate it and make it better, that's great. It takes some effort. It's going to take effort on everybody's part to do it, but that's what we're striving for.
I got some great listeners to the show. I just got a tweet for a website where you can locate a supplier, find a glass container distributor. Problem is, I'm looking at these various companies. A lot of them are not in state. Oh, there's one in Arlington Heights, Berlin Packaging in Arlington Heights. Here's the website. Let's see. Wow, it's a long one. I'll tell you what, Kathleen, if you're listening and you see this on Twitter, Tree Guardian 2 sent us this link. Let's pop it on the Facebook page. And if people want to be able to go to that site and find a glass supplier, and it's the Glass Packaging Institute are the people behind this. But it's not a huge list. I mean, comparatively, it's pretty small. So let's put that up there, and I'll read it. Just it's www.gpi.org to start, and then I think you have to go to Glass Resources at the top of the page, and then click on locate a supplier. So www.gpi.org, Glass Resources, and locate a supplier for that. So thank you, Tree Guardian 2, for that information. And thank you, Rick Hootman, for agreeing to talk to us. I'm very excited about this program. Here's what I'd love to do. I'd love to do a follow-up in, a year.
Right.
And see how successful this has been and how much of this organic waste you've diverted. As you know, your goal is, 16 to 18 tons per year.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do better, you should let us know. If it's what I'm basically interested in as a member of the Chicago Recycling Coalition is the learning curve for the rest of it and getting people to do the right thing when they're on the premises.
Right. Yeah, that like I said, it takes some steps to do that, takes an effort, but we can just take one step at a time and hope it works for the best.
Well, it's a good first step. It really is. So I'm going to give you guys a ding for that. All right, Rick Hoopman, Director of Visitor Programs. For all of you folks listening, go out to the Morton Arboretum. Wonderful place. I don't get out there often enough. I was so happy to get out there this week and just explore a little bit again. It's just always a revelation, and you guys are doing good work, and I appreciate it, and I hope we talk again soon.
Great. We appreciate you having us, Mike. Thank you very much.
Have a great Sunday.
You too. Bye. Bye-bye.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Okay, last half hour. It's just us. I got a few things that I want to discuss, but... would welcome your phone call, 773-763-9278. Here we go. I guess Tom, my buddy Tom, sent a link about cat-bird issues. Alley Cat Allies. And I think that that's where the woman was that... Okay, and it's a list of pretty cool of different links about bird killing, and you go to www.alleycat.org, and I guess if you do in the search box type in bird killing, you'll get a lot of things. But the that was the thing I saw this week. Now I'm going to have to find it, was a the kitty cam. And let me find this just a second because folks may want to go to kitty cam and find out a little. There it is. There's the kitty cam. And it was a article in the Los Angeles Times that wrote about this effort, and it's popping. Oh, page not found. Thanks. Now I got to type in kitty camp. All right, I'll do that in a second. And again, the number is 773-763-9278. I'll tell you what, I'll do this and see if I can track down that story.
Are you passionate about fitness, nutrition, personal growth, or living a sustainable lifestyle? Natural Awakenings magazine is your local guide to a healthier, greener, and more balanced life. Each monthly issue includes timely articles about nutrition, alternative and holistic medicine, fitness for your body and mind, healthy pets, recipes, an extensive events calendar, and more. Natural Awakenings is available across Chicago and in the north and northwest suburbs. Get your free copy at wellness and fitness centers, health food and grocery stores, coffee shops, libraries, and wherever free publications are found. Or visit us online at www.nachicagonorth.com. Advertisers, Natural Awakenings magazine is the perfect way to reach health-conscious and green readers looking for businesses just like yours. Call 847-858-3697 today to learn more about advertising opportunities. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Doesn't matter if the season is winter or spring or summer or fall. If you have mature trees in your yard, you just might want to have the Care of Trees phone number handy. They can't restore the power after a big storm, but they do have 24-hour emergency service, and they can take care of your damaged trees. I should probably be calling them for my block. But those are city trees. So... many people don't understand how dangerous it is to remove or prune storm-damaged trees yourself, especially if a tree falls on a car, other structures, power lines, or even other trees. The Care of Trees offers 24-hour emergency service to assist in performing the job safely while minimizing further risk to your property. The Care of Trees shares your enthusiasm for the many ways trees enhance the quality of your life. Invite the certified arborists, and that's key. They are certified arborists at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220, 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees, and they are also a wonderful, great sponsor of Dig In Chicago.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
In case you hadn't awakened on a Sunday morning yet, I thought I'd just throw that in there.
Worked for me.
Yeah, I know. You were you got the blood flowing there now.
I do. I want to take a jog after the show.
No. Don't get carried away.
Oh.
Don't get all crazy on me.
Yeah, you're right. No jog.
No exercise or anything like that. Let us go back to the phones again. 773-763-9278. On line one, we have Phil in Algonquin. How you doing this morning, Phil?
I'm doing great. Mike, how are you doing?
I'm, you know, as Tom Hartman says, I'm great, but I'll get better.
I was going to use that line. I love Tom Hartman.
I got you first.
I listen because now they put Jeff Santos on there in Tom's old slot, and I only catch like 10 minutes of Tom now on my break in the afternoon. But Jeff, I'm getting used to Jeff. I've even called him three or four times, and he's usually spot on with what he's talking about.
Well, Jeff knows his stuff too. You know it's and as you know, this is the only place in the Chicago area you're going to get that that good progressive talk.
I know.
So
now I also sent in a song to Jeff, and in fact, I sent it to your station manager, Matt. I forget what his name, and I saw Fred and. Out at the Veggie Fest yesterday.
Oh, hey, listen, I'm so glad you said that, because I know Fred's at the Veggie Fest, give me a report on Veggie Fest, Phil.
Do what? I'm sorry?
Give me a report on Veggie Fest.
Oh, we had a good time. We were there yesterday. Today looks like it's a better day because you're not going to get baked like a clam, but we had a good time. We got ourselves a nice little tan and had some great food. They've come a long way in making food that's vegetarian look like real meat. We had some chicken yesterday that had the same texture and the tearing and everything just like chicken, and they, you know, the spices they put on it made it taste great. Yeah, there's just so much food to taste out there. You could eat all three meals out there in one day.
You're funny because you make me smile there, Phil, because you're an omnivore. You want your meat, so you want your veggies.
Yeah.
Your veggie food to look like meat and taste like meat. And
yeah, take me out. That's okay.
But what I love about you is that it's cool. You're allowed to be, you don't mind being faked out in a good cause, and I admire you for that.
And that is a good cause. But I wanted to mention that I did send a song that I wrote, Are You in the 99%, to your station manager. I sent it to Jeff Santos, and I've been sending it to political organizations, MoveOn.org, Progressive Democrats of America, and just trying to get some support for our Democratic progressives out there. And people can go and get a free download at cdbaby.com. Just type in that and then go and type in the name, Are You in the 99%, and they can get a free download. I also got a video on YouTube performing the song live, and I'm just having a
blast. Live?
Reactions from this. But the reason that I called, oh, yeah.
Now give me that website again if people want to download that. So make sure they got it.
Oh, sure. www.cdbaby.com.
Okay, and what should they type in?
The title of the song, mm-hmm. Are You in the 99%.
And it's not the letters R-U, it's spelled A-R-E-Y-O-U, right?
Right, right. I'm glad you pointed that out, Mike, because I considered using the letters R-U, but if I would have done that, what it would have spelled out is ruin the 99%, because it would have been R-U-N the 99%.
Wow.
Ruined the 99%.
You are smarter. So Phil, you are smarter than most PR people right now and most marketing people, because that's one of those things that they would have done and released, and then suddenly they'd be stuck with that website.
Oh, yeah, and you don't want to be stuck with a website like that, because the other two Yahoos on the Republican side, you know, Mitt and Paul would have a field day with that. And say, look at that, they're trying to shoot themselves in the foot.
Okay, so now, your other point was?
Oh, well, I was listening to you on the way to the store this morning, and I heard you talking about using recycled bottles to catch your rainwater and water the garden. We have a few rain barrels around the house, and what we do is we save our gallon wine jugs. I could give you a brand name, but I don't know if I should do that. There's plenty of companies out there that make wine and sell it in gallon jugs. So over the winter, as we're guzzling our wine, you know, a bottle a week, we save those bottles, and then come spring when we start catching rainwater in the barrels, we empty the rainwater into the wine jugs, and then we use that to sprinkle the garden and the flowers and stuff.
You're right. That's not a bad thing to do, the gallon wine jugs. You gotta like wine in a gallon jug, I suppose, to buy one in the first place.
Yeah. Well, we're not winos, but we love our wine. You know, a bottle a week is about average around here.
Hey, listen, guilty is charged, okay?
It's not for, we can't even claim that it's for medicinal purposes.
But you know, that's a great idea. There's another way to collect wine, because what we do in our household, maybe Kathleen, do you want to get some jug wine today? We use the, Phil, I hadn't talked earlier about collecting rain in containers, but that you bring a really good point. What we do, and I mentioned this many, many times on the show, our milk jugs, the plastic milk jugs, get used in perpetuity in my household to water my plants and water the we use them outside. We've been watering our tomato plants and peppers in the earth boxes and in our other containers. And what we do is when we're running the hot water in the sink, we run it into the milk jug. Then we sit it down in the kitchen, let it gas off overnight, and then use it on the plants. And the plants like it so much better because it doesn't have the chlorine in it, or a lot of it has been gassed off. And that's what we do. But, you know, I hadn't thought about that. Wine jugs. That's not a bad idea.
All right.
Well,
else will like it, and then keep the wine business happy too.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Phil, thanks. That's a great contribution, especially since you went to Veggie Fest. And by the way, it is on the grounds of the Science of Spirituality Meditation Center. That's 4 South 175 Naperville Wheaton Road in Naperville. It's today. It goes from 11 a.m. So it's going to open up in about 18 minutes, goes till 8 p.m. Go out there and see Fred Newson from WCPT, Chicago's Progressive Talk. Say hi and say that Mike sent you.
Great.
All right. I appreciate the contribution to the show very much, Phil.
Okay, Mike. Have a good day. Thanks.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
773-763-9278 is our phone number. We're going to back to the phones. Let us talk to Dan in Crystal Lake. Dan, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
Good. How you doing? Well, I was just kind of connecting the dots. I was outside picking up dog poop, and I'm using a plastic bag, and I'm looking to, you know, I'm going to throw this thing in the garbage.
Right.
What, I mean, we compost, but we don't put anything, like, with protein, because that's what supposedly grows maggots. That's what, you know, in what we've read and what we've learned.
Oh, you're talking about using dog feces in compost?
Oh, no. I'm looking to see what else there is to do. Because like I said, I was picking up the poop in a plastic bag and tossing it in the garbage.
Yeah.
So what else is there?
You mean to get rid of the poop?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it's, you know, if you're not going to, if you're not going to grow vegetables in it, I don't know why you wouldn't throw it in a garden. And you know, after a while, it's going to mellow. You dig it in. And as long as you're not dealing with vegetables and the being exposed to the pathogens that are in there, and that's what you really
we have a garden with vegetables.
So you know, any manure you're going to use should be composted before you put it in your garden. Okay, yeah. that's the point. And you might remember a couple of years, I think about a year and a half ago, maybe it was last year, it's about a year and a half ago, where I had one of the Garden Rant women on the show who had written a book, a really wonderful book, and we got into this whole dog poop question, and it sort of controlled the conversation for weeks. And we had some people get mighty upset at me, actually at her, because she kind of went on about how, oh, yeah, you know, let it, if it mellows, if it's, you know, you're using it 6 months later, who cares? And people went off the charts and just said, no, you don't, you know, yeah, oh my God, what are you doing? So what I'm going to say, so I don't get myself in trouble, is don't put it anywhere near food and don't put it anywhere near compost that's going to be used on food.
Yeah.
But if you have a separate compost pile that's not going to be used that and it's just going to go for your ornamentals, I really can't see the harm. Now, that being said, I also can't really see the harm of it going into the waste stream. You know, better that we take all of our organic material and try to take it back to the earth. Okay, that's the first step. But you know, most people are not going to do that. They're going to pick up. And thank goodness you're at least picking it up, because a lot of people don't even do that.
Sure.
And the other thing you're doing, because you're using the plastic, the thing we say about plastic, and then we try to avoid plastic, is where the thing that I'm most against is one use plastic. You know, the folks that use a plastic bag once at a grocery store and then never use it again.
Yeah.
Well, at least when you're picking up poop, you're using it twice.
Okay.
You know, there's, but you know, maybe somebody's going to tell me I'm crazy, but my feeling is if you compost it in something that's never going to be used for your vegetables, I can't see the problem with putting it in the garden as long as it's been composted properly over a long time, because at some point those pathogens are going to go away.
Sure. So like a secondary compost.
Yeah, you know, and I had never thought of that, but maybe folks would have a secondary kind of compost.
I mean, it's, you know, I can imagine that everybody else with three dogs that, you know, has a small yard that constantly picks up the stuff, you know, need something to do with it.
And it piles up, so to speak.
We watched Tap this weekend. I don't know if you're, you know, if you've seen that, but that's a great documentary about bottled water and the water.
You know, that's another one I got to add. I've got so many. I'm so glad you brought up Tapped. That's another one that I have to see. Beth Terry mentions it in her book. I've got this list of documentaries that I haven't seen yet that I've got to get to.
Yeah, because I heard her last weekend, and that's what, you know, kind of started, you know, I mean, we're very, you know, adamant about recycling. You know, seven-eighths of our product goes back into the recycling business.
Good for you. Good for you, you know, Dan.
And it's just, we watched this movie, Friday night, and it was just like, wait a second, look at all the other plastic we're using. And then, you know, I heard Beth last weekend, so it's just kind of like, you know, I was outside picking the stuff up. I had a plastic bag and it was going in the garbage. I'm like, there's got to be a better way for this. So, I mean, if there's anybody who else, you know, has other tips and stuff, I'd be interested in.
Again, give me a holler, tweet me, write to me on Facebook. and I just got a tweet from My Skinny Garden about, remember I talked about the controversy over the dog poop? She says, please, no dog poop talk. I'm having flashbacks. So,
oh, no.
Yeah, me too. But you know, I hope I don't get myself in trouble for that. But my feeling is, if it's not being used around food, what could the harm be? And it keeps it out of the landfill. Sure. And there's a lot of dog poop in the United States. I forget when we had the Poo Free Parks people on here, there was some figure they had about how much dog poop is created in America that could fill up some football stadium 14 times over or something. I'm thinking, wow, that's a lot of dog poop.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I can't even imagine.
Yeah, I can't even. Phil, great call. I'm sorry, not Phil. Dan.
Dan.
Dan, thank you so much, Dan. I appreciate it. You have a great Sunday.
You too now. Thanks.
Bye-bye. 773-763-9278. Let's go to John in Zion. Hi, John. You're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hi, Mike. I got a question for you.
Yeah.
I've been gardening for all my life, and now I'm 58. But having a problem with, I think it's with the solar flares this year. Everything is wilting and dying real quick off. And I'm kind of wondering if the ultraviolet light is actually getting down onto the plants too much because they're wilting during the daylight. I end up getting some of that screen material and put it up on top, like for high noon, all the way to 2 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Then they perk back up.
Well, it's...
It'd be like...
yeah, you know...
Plants.
Well, it sounds like heat and drought to me.
Yeah, well, you know, the weather, we've had it up in the hundreds last month.
Right, and what's happened in the last few days? I'm betting the plants have perked up.
The plants perk up after they're covered. The beans, I had peas for the first time, and they kind of died off.
Mm-hmm.
I planted new plants, and they haven't grown back. And the beans look, green beans look like, I guess they're bush. The bush lay on the ground. They're dying off already because they always produce the first. And then the vine, the pole, or the climbing ones, Kentucky Wonders, they end up producing late, but they used to grow, the bean plant and the beans themselves used to grow lower to the ground. Now the beans that are growing up on top, they're hiding inside the leaves and they're producing up there.
Mm-hmm. If my first thought on this is that basically what you're seeing is not so much ultraviolet. You're just seeing heat and drought, which, you know, it's been brutal. And it's a matter of hydration. It's also a matter of what have you got in your soil? How do you, you know, what do you put in your soil each year for your garden?
Well, getting back to the last couple callers, you know, you had talked about manure. Unfortunately, I bought horse manure 2 years ago, and then I was reading the Mother Earth News.
Yeah.
And they say there's a chemical that they put on the feed, not the feed, but out in the grasses where they're grazing, the horse picks it up, which ends up making that... their poop, neutral for at least 2 to 3 years, and you're never supposed to put that in the garden. I learned my lesson the hard way.
Mm, so it's quite possible that you are dealing with soil problems and not really with sun problems. I mean, you want sun for your veggies.
Mm-hmm.
I know in our vegetable garden on my block, our secret this year was water like crazy.
Yeah.
And even then, we were getting droopy plants in the 100-degree heat because that's how they respond. They're transpiring. They're letting off all that water, and it's hard for them to keep up. As Jennifer mentioned earlier, you know, the plant is basically taking up water and letting it go and can't even manufacture food because it's all happening so fast.
Right. I'm kind of wondering if anybody else has experienced the same problems.
I welcome them to give me a call or shoot me a line, but my feeling is I think – John, well, you might have learned a lesson about the horse manure. And that's the other thing. You got to know the inputs of manure you're using.
Yeah, you should tell all the other listeners about that, too. Mother Earth News. And the furthermore, somebody was talking about water a little while ago.
Yeah.
If you know, I don't know if you guys get National Geographic magazine, but it says in there how you can take your plastic water bottles, take water from creeks, streams, or whatever, put that into the bottle, lay it on a hot plate, a tin, and don't disturb it for 6 to 8 hours, and it will kill all the bacteria that can possibly be in that water, and you can consume that later if you want it, or save it for your plants.
Mm.
But it gets rid of all the bacterias.
Well, that's, you know, there are people who argue that's why water's treated as well in a city water system. It's an interesting... We had this conversation the other week about, I guess it was a couple of weeks ago when I had the woman who wrote the book on plastics, and it was, which water's safer, you know? Obviously, if it comes out of the sky, it's probably the best. And if it comes out of your tap, the city has regulations it has to adhere to. However, if you don't like chlorine or fluoride, that's a problem. But bottled water is not regulated at all.
Right.
And so people who think that they're getting the safest water by drinking bottled water, and that was our point.
Right.
So that's very interesting. All right, John, I appreciate
I tried talking to you a couple months ago about the same situation, and I never got your email or nothing like that. And I asked you to email me because I can't even find your website. Everything comes up a blank every time.
Really?
Yeah, it was about the quality of the water. Remember, I don't know if you remember me or not, the tap water, and I tried germinating seeds and stuff of that nature.
Now, I don't remember receiving that, so it's possible I didn't get your email. I'll tell you what, shoot me an email again. It's mike@mikenowak.net, and it's N-O-W-A-K.
N-O-W-N-K?
A-K.
A-K. .net.
Okay.
Alrighty.
All right. Thanks for calling. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If there's one thing that all gardeners do, it's ask questions. Yeah, you're getting some of them today. Questions like, what the heck happened to my squash? What did I do with that jug of wine?
What happened to your pumpkin?
What happened to... They stole more this week. We had two more stolen.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Two more stolen from... And we're having our big potluck in the yard today, so... I do want to have a little chat. And Kathleen's like, you're not going to lecture people. I said, no, I'm just going to ask them to keep their eyes open. Just see who's taking the pumpkins. All right. Anyway, you need a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine because the good folks who put that publication together are always answering questions. In the July-August issue, for instance, you can read Adele Klein's Q&A column where she answers questions about why coral and raspberry yarrow flowers are reverting to white, why branches on a lilac are turning yellow, how to protect linden trees from Japanese beetles, good luck, whether wisteria that has been cut back will bloom anytime soon, good luck, and why an endless summer hydrangea seems to be more trouble than it's worth. Yeah, good luck. My Diggin' Chicago host, Jennifer Brennan, has a great answer for that one, actually, in Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Then there's my column on the inside back page. The question most people ask about that is, why is it there? Unfortunately, there are no good answers for that. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over town, or get a subscription. Go to ChicagolandGardening.com or 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Summer has arrived, and for many gardeners, that means heat, drought, and watering bans. Help your landscapes thrive despite these seasonal challenges with proper care and Milorganite fertilizer. Hi, I'm gardening expert Melinda Myers. Mulch the soil with a layer of organic material to conserve moisture, reduce weeds, and improve the soils it breaks down. Water plants thoroughly and less frequently whenever you irrigate the garden. This encourages deep roots, making your plants more drought tolerant and pest resistant. Water early in the day to reduce water loss to evaporate. And be sure to use Milorganite for all your summer fertilization needs. The organic nitrogen is slow release and won't burn plants even during drought. Milorganite remains in the soil until the conditions are right for plant growth, including your lawn, so there's no need to water it in. Plus, the 4% non-staining iron promotes deep green growth. So choose Milorganite for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com for a garden center near you. That's Milorganite.com.
Coming into the home stretch of the Mike Novak Show, couple of things I'm going to call to your attention, and it's on my website here. The governor surprises us all by vetoing the Leucadia coal gasification plant on Chicago's southeast side. Isn't that cool, Dennis?
Booyah.
Yeah. Very nice. Thank you, Governor Quinn, for doing that. You can find more information about that. I'm kind of surprised by that. And now we just want him to veto that plastic bag bill that is so bad. And if he does, I'm calling it the hat trick. You know, we got the landfill ban. Now we've vetoed the Leucadia coal gasification plant. And if he would veto the plastic bag bill, this is great stuff for the environment. Also, that article, real quick, I found on the New York Times, From November 2010 to October 2011, researchers at the University of Georgia strapped lightweight video cameras onto 60 house cats in Athens, Georgia, to find out exactly what domesticated kitties do and where they go when their owners let them out to roam. 2,000 hours of footage later, researchers said 44% of the cats went on attempted killing sprees and 85% engaged in dangerous behaviors like crossing two-lane streets and exploring tight spaces where they might get trapped. Oh, man. And so the kitty cam, if I got enough, nah, I don't really have much time. Where it was the conclusion, after sorting 2,000 hours of footage, it's better for wildlife. Better for wildlife and for cats if they remain indoors as much as possible. Where was the number? There was, and they were designed by National Geographic, so, you know, they're out there, they're killing stuff. So, you know, we're going to have to do the kitty cam show. But next week, I'm going to have Joe McCarthy from Department of Forestry. We're going to talk about the tree damage caused by all that work in your block. Till then, go green or go home.